This time it was Leia's turn to call an inner council meeting on short notice. Wedge stood behind her as support and verification as she called the meeting to order.
It's irregular,
Riot Combe said.
To have a non-member present.
General Antilles is here at my request, Leia said. We discovered something rather disturbing this afternoon.
Wedge set the detonators on the table.
Leia gestured toward them.
We found these in our X-Wings. The entire squadron is outfitted with them, apparently.
They're detonators, Wedge said.
No sounded stunned.
With Imperial markings.
Meadow peered at the detonators and smiled at Leia.
Nice try, President.
She felt a chill.
Try?
Try. We accuse General Solo, and you find a device that points to the Empire. How very convenient.
You've gone too far, Bell Ibris said. You owe the President an apology.
Leia waved a hand to silence Bell. Actually, I'd like to hear why Senator Meadow believes I have suddenly become a traitor to the Republic.
Your husband, President, and his attack on the Hall. I'm glad you called this meeting, because I was about to call one myself. You need to know that there's a no-confidence movement in the Senate. There will be a vote shortly. If it passes, you will have to step down.
Luke wrapped his arms around his head as he soared freely through the air. It felt as if he would fall forever. And then he landed, legs first, the bones in his left ankle snapping. He tucked and rolled, the pavement biting his back, his shoulders. He lay still for a moment, unable to breathe from the shock. The artificial skin had burned off his synthetic right hand, revealing the mechanical workings. The main section of the X-Wing had landed near him. More parts rained around him, sparks flying. No one came to gawk at the explosion. No one came to put out the fire. No one came to help him. The emptiness appalled him more than the crash. The only sound he heard was the snap of flames and his own ragged breathing. He caught his breath and limped inside the nearest building. In the empty Pederian house, Luke couldn't find a Bacta tank, but he found something better, a Pederian healing stick. Such sticks had been used all over the galaxy long before the Bacta tank came into being, and some thought the sticks were better. He found his stick upstairs in the house. When the healing stick was rubbed against the surface, a soothing white residue remained behind. Most of the pain from the burn faded. He was nearly done with the healing stick when he felt a disturbance in the force. A familiar presence was nearby. A stand near the door held walking sticks and canes. He pulled one out and leaned on it. Clutching the cane, he limped down the stairs. The mist makers had weakened his system. The burns and the fall had made him lose even more strength.
Size matters not,
Yoda had told him. He hoped that applied to strength as well. Out in the street, a man stood alone. He was taller than Luke, and he wore a long black cape, shiny military boots, and body armor reminiscent of a stormtrooper's. A Hindanan death mask that molded to the skin covered his face.
You still don't recognize me, do you, Master Skywalker?
The voice had a depth and resonance that was unfamiliar, but the inflections were familiar. Dolph, he said, guessing with as much certainty as he could muster. Luke felt the surprise in the man across from him. Dolph had counted on not being recognized.
You're better than I realized. My name is Queller now.
Dolph had been an extremely talented student who had always had a darkness in him. He had left the academy in the middle of the night after receiving news from home. Everything depended on how Luke played the next few moments. You left before I had the chance to give you my condolences over the deaths of your family.
Your sympathies are both false and too late. The Jehar brutally slaughtered my family. My parents were staked to the bridge leading to the Jehar Palace and left to rot in the heat. It took them a week to die.
Luke was leaning harder on the cane than he needed to. He wanted Dolph to think he was weaker than he really was.
Tell me, Dolph, what's the difference between the Jehar and you?
The death mask's mouth thinned.
Does speaking in riddles amuse you, Skywalker? Or do you do it to buy time?
I do it because I am truly curious. You've destroyed every being on this planet. I suspect that in the time I was here, you destroyed another planet as well. Murder is murder, Dolph, at least to me. Is it to you?
The death mask shivered. My name is Queller.
Your name is Dolph, and I will only talk to Dolph. The Dolph I met was a gifted, loving boy who had a vast future before him.
That Dolph is dead. The Jehar murdered him when they murdered his family.
Dolph swept his gloved hand around.
The Jehars of the universe shall disappear, along with those who serve them. Those like your sister and her government.
Leia had nothing to do with your family's murder.
Precisely. And she was one of the few who could have prevented it.
Luke went forward a few steps. Brakkus said you wanted me to come here. Dolph nodded.
I want to give you a choice. I need your strength. Join me and rid this universe of the evils of beings like the Jehar.
Luke looked intently at him. I will join you if you renounce the dark side.
So be it, then.
Slowly, Queller drew his lightsaber. Its blade burned blue. Luke grabbed his lightsaber and blocked Queller's swipe with his own blade. Queller hit at Luke's left, then his right, then his heart. Luke kept blocking. Queller pushed him backwards toward the house. Luke stumbled on his weak leg and collapsed on his knee. A river of pain ran through his thigh. Queller brought his lightsaber down onto Luke's shoulder, but Luke rolled away from it, his back burning as street dirt ground into his wounds. He pushed himself up and swiped at Queller. Queller pushed closer and knocked Luke's lightsaber from his hand. Then he held the blue blade beneath Luke's chin.
I should kill you now, but I need you to lure your sister here.
You don't want to face the two of us, Dolph. Queller snapped his fingers. Stormtroopers, their white uniforms gleaming in the sun, emerged from the surrounding buildings.
Take him to Almania.
Leia felt like she was back on Hoth working on the rebel base. She and Wedge were seated side by side, the computers before them humming with activity. Admiral Akbar sat at another terminal, and so did the other high-ranking military officials. They were tracking down the X-wings that had left Coruscant after the reconditioning. She had to stay busy. Beneath her anger at Mido, she felt a deep unease. A lieutenant bent over her station.
President Organa Sulo, there is a message for you. Would you like to take it privately?
She glanced around the room. These people were her most trusted friends. I'll take it here. The air rippled. Then it smoothed into a see-through wall.
It's coming from a long distance away,
Admiral Akbar said. Finally, the ripples coalesced into a face.
Leia gasped.
It was the skeletal face she had seen just before the bombing.
Leia Organa Solo. My name is Queller. You have not heard of me, but you have felt my presence.
A shudder ran down her back. How had he known that?
You felt it when I destroyed the people of Padir in a single moment, without using anything as crude as a Death Star or a Star Destroyer. I prefer elegant, simple weapons, don't you?
Leia jutted out her chin. She had to look regal and unafraid before this madman.
What do you want?
The death mask smiled at her.
Your attention, madam.
An image waved, then coalesced into a small form collapsed on the floor. Beside it, metal burned.
The figure was Luke.
His flight suit was in rags. His back looked like a mass of raw flesh. He wasn't moving.
Luke, she said.
Luke's voice coming through the force was cut off.
No mental games, President Organa Solo. Your brother lives. For now.
What have you done to him?
The Death's Head smiled.
I did nothing. His ship conveniently destroyed itself.
The X-Wing, Wedge whispered.
Admiral Akbar shushed him.
I would have preferred that he land a bit closer to home, but he did not. Still, he's on my property now. And on my property, he will stay. Unless you do two things. First, you must disband your inefficient government. And second, you must turn power over to me.
Why would we do that?
Because I will kill your brother if you do not. And your husband. And your children.
Leia forced herself to swallow. She would feel terror and anger later. Now she had to be a leader. The best leader the New Republic had ever known.
What if I refuse?
Then I will destroy your subjects, President. I can kill all of them at once.
That's hundreds of worlds,
Admiral Akbar said.
You can't kill that many beings at the same time.
Ah, but I can.
The Death's Head turned, looked at something in its view. The mouth gave an order in a language Leia was unfamiliar with. She looked to Wedge in confusion. He shrugged, and as he did so, a wave of terror hit her. It was mixed with cold and voices screaming. She felt a betrayal and shock so deep that it devastated her.
Not again!
Stop! She thought, or maybe she screamed. And then the voices were silent. She was sitting on the floor, tears she hadn't known she shed on her cheeks. The others in the room were staring at her in astonishment. Wedge helped her up. What happened? The death mask smiled.
I am stronger than you will ever be, President. You have heard my demands. Either you acquiesce, or in 3 days' time, I will kill your brother.
Who was that?
Admiral Akbar asked.
I don't know, Leia said. But this Quella, whoever he is, has some force capability. He knew I would feel those deaths.
The lieutenant was checking records. There are no reports of exploded planets, either now or just before the bombing of the Senate Hall. Wedge slipped back into his chair. Quella said he used an elegant weapon. We're looking for something too big. We need to know what planets haven't been heard from lately, or what unusual events have transpired in nearby space. Akbar frowned.
Lots of reports of mid-space collisions in the landing area around Amish.
The lieutenant chimed in.
All attempts to contact others on the planet have failed.
Where's Amish? Leia asked.
It's a tiny planet in a far system, Akbar said. It's on the Coruscant side of the Almanian system.
The Almanian system? Was this the Almania Lando had mentioned?
Leia? Wedge's voice was soft. The computer identified the buildings around Luke. The Pedirian. That's also in the Almanian system. Admiral Akbar added,
we just had it confirmed. The transmission came from Almania itself.
Leia paced in her chamber, still no response from Han. She checked her messages every few moments, but she knew nothing would come. The chamber computer bonged.
Mistress Leia, Mon Mothma is here to see you.
Let her in.
Of all her friends on Coruscant, only Mon Mothma would understand the dilemma Leia faced. When they were seated, Leia began,
I think Queller was trained as a Jedi.
Mon Mothma's eyes widened.
Have you evidence of that? Nothing concrete, but he's contacted me before in ways that Luke would train his students to use. And he managed to shut off communication between me and Luke.
Any Salamiri would do that, Mon Mothma said.
Yes, and so could someone versed in the dark side.
And if Quella destroys you, he scatters the Jedi and becomes the strongest in the Force in the galaxy.
Or so he thinks, Leia said.
It sounds plausible.
Yes.
Then Leia smiled at herself.
But I'm rattled. It might be much simpler than that. Queller might misunderstand the way the New Republic works. He might think I'm an autocrat and that my word is law. then threatening my family might get me to force my hand. Mon Mothma spoke softly.
He doesn't know you well, does he? Threats to your family always make you stronger.
Leia rubbed at her burning eyes. She didn't want sympathy, not yet, anyway.
I need to step down as chief of state. I'm going after my brother.
Skip 6 was shaped like a giant, seething mud hole floating in the middle of the asteroid belt. Slime oozed along its surface. Landing the Falcon there would have been impossible, but Han hadn't brought the Falcon. Instead, he had appealed to sinewy Anna Blue's conscience, or what was left of it, and got to use her skipper. Smugglers, who spent a lot of time in the run, built ships called skippers that were perfect for the asteroid belt. They were small vehicles that didn't carry a lot of cargo. The ships could land on any surface, including mud, and could take off in most conditions, even the constant swirling rock storms around Skip 52. It was a tight fit for so many passengers. Blue came along, she said, because she had hated giving Lando to those wrecks. Han had to badger Jean and Kid at blaster point into remembering how much they owed Lando. Han went to the door of the skipper. The rest of the crew were already there, peering at the hole that led into the mudslide that would take them to Nandreessen's pool. Warm, wet mud bubbled around the door of the skipper. Steam rose from the sides. All right, Han said. Into the mud. Blue grinned at him.
You take us such exciting places.
Then she pinched her nose and leapt out the skipper's door. She landed in the center of the mud hole and slid in. The others followed. Han was the last one out. The mud was hot and slimy. Jean treaded water next to him.
Nice place, Solo.
The kid's bald head was covered with green algae.
Yeah, you should have warned us we'd be swimming.
Han looked around. The water went all the way to the edge of the cavern walls. He saw signs of glottalfish, algae, lily pads, gnats. He swam forward, rounded a rock wall, and found himself in an even bigger cavern. 6 glottalfish sat on the rock ledge surrounding the pond, and another, Nandreessen, was waist-deep in water. Lando was in the middle of the pond, his head barely above water. His face was gray with exhaustion, his movement sluggish. Still, he managed his Calrissian smile. Some rescue, Han! Nandreessen saw him, too.
Solo, I was going to give up on getting you. I had Calrissian, that was enough. But since you're here now...
He waved a tiny hand. And all 6 glottalfish blasted the water with flame. Han ducked under and watched the algae burn on top of the water. He surfaced and looked at Lando. What's going on here? He's playing water hockey and you're the puck?
Close. He's planning to watch me drown.
Nice, Han said. Real creative. He turned to Nandreessen. If you had half the brains Jabba had, you'd own the run by now.
I do,
Nandreessen said. Han shook his head. Now, if you own the run, then how did I manage to recruit a team?
You didn't.
Jean took Han's arm. Han turned and found himself nose to nose with Jean's blaster. The kid has his blaster on Chewie.
You know, Solo,
Nandreessen said.
You're right. This drowning method lacks originality. I'm tired of watching a man die slowly. Let's speed it up, shall we?
Leia was nearly finished outfitting her ship Alderaan. She had made up her mind. She was going to Almania, going to Luke. She had persuaded Mon Mothma to step in for her in the Senate, and the former leader had reluctantly agreed. A knock on the hatch made her whirl. Wedge stood there, wearing his general's uniform. He had to duck under the door as he stepped in. Mon Mothma sent me.
I'm not staying, Wedge, she said, no matter how much you argue. Luke is in trouble. I can't raise Han on the comm, and by the time the Senate votes to help, Luke will be dead.
Wedge put his hat on the co-pilot's chair. You don't have to justify your actions to me. Mon Mothma is sending me and a fleet with you. Leia's legs felt suddenly weak.
A fleet? She can't do that. It takes full approval of the Senate.
Technically. There are always ways around that, as you well know.
The water churned with blaster fire. Han dove under the water, grabbed Jean's legs, and tugged him under. Jean kicked at him, but Han hung on. Jean's fist connected with Han's chin, but the water softened the blow. Han shoved Jean's shoulders downward. Jean grabbed for Han, but missed. The momentum of the water and the sinkhole pulled Jean deeper. Han swam to the surface. Lando had Kid in an arm lock, and they were struggling, both going under, then coming up and spitting out water. All around them, the water sizzled with laser bolts. Chewbacca was firing his bowcaster at the glottalfibs. One lay dead on the ledge, while another floated face down on the pond. The other glottalfibs were shooting fire at the water, boiling it. The heat was incredible. Han grabbed the blaster out of Kid's hands, punched him in the face, and pushed him under as he had Jean. Then he grabbed Lando and pulled him up. "Breathe, buddy." Lando was breathing hard, but he nodded and swam free. Han handed him the blaster, then grabbed his own blaster. Lando floated on his back, took aim at the ceiling, and fired. Han was about to tell him not to waste his shots when a million Watumba bats swooped down. The glottalfibs started honking in unison and slapping at the bats with their tiny arms. The first bats had already reached one glottalfib and flown into its mouth. The glottalfib's honking got louder as more bats covered it. Suddenly it stopped honking. It fell over backwards, squashing bats. The other glottalfibs were fleeing down the tunnel, honking in fear. Lando was starting to swim forward. "Come on!" And then he went under. Han dove too. Nandreessen had Lando by the foot and was watching him flail. Han swam around Lando's front, stopping a few meters from Nandreessen, then kicked at the glottalfib's snout. Nandreessen roared. As he opened his mouth, an energy quarrel bubbled through the water and lodged in the back of his throat. He let go of Lando's leg, and Lando swam for the surface. Nandreessen made verbally strangling sounds, grabbed at his mouth, and sank deep into the muck. Han didn't wait to see any more. He swam to the surface and motioned to Chewie. Lando was already climbing the stairs. Blue was standing on the ledge behind them, clinging to the wall.
"Have you thought about how we're going to get back to my skipper?"
"Playing both ends against the middle, Blue?" Han asked, essentially rephrasing Chewie's remark in more polite terms. Lando sat down on the stairs. "Don't expect too much of the girl. At least she didn't shoot at us." Han sat beside him. "What'd you come here for?"
"Came to get you, buddy. Heard you were in some trouble. Thought I'd help."
Chewie sloshed his way over to Han. "All right, all right. We'll leave." Lando struggled to his feet.
"How do you plan to get out of here?"
Why did everyone think he always had a plan? Han sighed. "I thought maybe you knew where Nandreessen's favorite skipper was."
"He brought me in it, but he left a few wrecks beside it."
"They should be gone by now," Blue said. "They hate Watumba bats as much as the glottalfibs do."
"Not accurate, Blue," Lando said. "Glottalfibs love Watumba bats. They're glottalfib delicacies. They just hate it when Watumba bats notice them."
Blue laughed.
"Good point."
Chewie was already sloshing his way to the cavern door. Dozens of glottalfibs were sprawled on the rocks and in the pond. Their long snouts opened, the insides picked clean. The opening into the next cavern was full of glottalfib bodies as well. There were also five skippers there, all of which were unattended. Lando examined them quickly, then called Han over.
"This one is ready to go, if you know how to hotwire them."
Blue pushed them aside.
"There's always an access code, and with Nandreessen, it should be obvious."
She leaned against the jam and said in a remarkable approximation of a nasal glottalfib voice,
"Kill Nandreessen."
The door slid back. Cole Fardreamer stood in the doorway of the maintenance bay, wiping his hands on a rag.
"I suppose the cryptic message Luke Skywalker left for me on the system's computer actually came from you, R2.
3PO threw up his hands.
Oh, really, Master Cole, he's not himself. I just found him going through the rubble in the Senate Hall. He believes he knows how the bomb got there. He says if we don't go there immediately, there will be another explosion. To the Senate Hall? Threepio waved his hands impatiently. No, to the place that the detonators came from. He wants to know, sir, if you can help us.
Luke awoke in a barely lit room. He was on his stomach, his back aching fiercely. His head throbbed and his mouth tasted fuzzy. The straw-covered pallet he lay on was only a few inches above the floor. Light filtered in through the grates above. He suspected they opened into another room or the light would have been brighter. His lightsaber was gone. He heard a faint shuffling and looked up. A gigantic white creature sat in the doorway, nearly filling it. The creature was sniffing a new scent. It came closer. Drool dripped off its mouth, landing in puddles near its feet. Luke worked to control his breathing. He willed himself invisible, but he didn't know how to send that vision to the thing in front of him. The size of the creature was amazing. If Luke stood, he might be able to reach its barrel chest. The creature followed the scent, finally focusing on Luke. It shoved its muzzle at him. Then it pulled back. It hadn't registered him as anything different from the straw. It tilted its head, its eyes glinting at him. Luke made eye contact. That was his mistake. With one quick movement, the creature took him in its jaws and bit down. Hard. Luke's legs disappeared into the Thernby's mouth. Queller turned away from the screen. I want a guard on him at all times.
Really, sir, only a miracle would save that man now, his assistant said.
It won't be that simple, Queller said. Four guards, at all times. Queller turned back to the screen. The Thernby's jaws were still closed. Queller sat down to wait until Skywalker appeared again. The beast's mouth was huge and had a flat ridge top. Even with the teeth clamped, there was room inside. The next time the tongue slammed Luke against the roof of the mouth, he dug his fingers into the soft palate. The creature yelped, the jaws opened, and Luke was sailing through the air. He hit the metal walls and slid to the ground. The wind knocked from him. The creature stood over him, a hurt expression on its enormous face. It contemplated him for a moment, then batted him across the wood floor. Splinters, the size of knives, stuck out of Luke's arms and back. The creature came toward him again. Luke eased himself to his feet and pulled one of the splinters out of his arm. When the creature raised its paw to him, Luke shoved the splinter into the pad. The creature yelped again, shook its paw, and limped off. When Han and the rest got back to where the Falcon was docked on Skip 1, they found that no one had taken anything. The Lady Luck wasn't as fortunate. Most of its interior was gone, including some of the easy-to-remove hardware. Han remained on board the Luck, repairing the engine systems with all the pieces he could find. Lando and Chewbacca went to search Skip 1 for the rest of the equipment and for Lando's missing droids. Suddenly, a series of booms echoed throughout the skip. The Lady Luck rocked, and Han slid to the other side of the corridor. More explosions occurred, and still more. He lay still, his arms over his head. When it was over, Han grabbed his blaster and let himself out the doors. And into a scene of devastation. The landing bay was in ruins. It looked as if someone had dropped a series of bombs. But the bay was a huge cavern carved in stone, and the ceiling hadn't been touched. Whatever had happened, happened inside. Small fires burned near many of the ships. A pile of exploded metal had welded itself onto the Falcon's side, but the ship was undamaged. The bodies of dead smugglers were strewn all over, and several ships had holes the size of boulders. Over the crackle of flames, Han could hear moaning and wailing from the survivors. Thick black smoke was filling the bay. Han went back into the Luck and grabbed a breath mask, then left the ship, calling for Chewbacca and Lando. He could imagine Chewie trapped beneath a rock, Lando crushed beside him.
Tan knew the odds of finding them at all were small. He had to try. He wound his way around several flaming piles to the Falcon. He went inside and grabbed the fire extinguishers and came out blasting. Across the bay, he saw Blue doing the same, using extinguishers from her skipper. Han grabbed a Stai who was digging through a pile of smoking rubble. Get the medical droids. All of them. We'll make an aid station on the Lady Luck. The Stai swiveled his small head.
Try it.
His eyes were red-rimmed.
That's a sick joke, mister.
I don't understand. The Stai sighed and wiped his claws on his fur.
That droid did this.
And he turned back to his digging. Han frowned, picturing droids on attack, firing weapons, but that made no sense. He had fought beside droids, and while they were clever, they never turned on their masters. Han! At the base of the Falcon's ramp, Lando stood with Chewbacca. Han made his way over to them. I thought you were dead.
We thought the same about you, Lando said. Things look bad. Most of the medical personnel were killed when their new medical droids exploded.
Han turned to Chewbacca. I thought of that too, Chewie. This is exactly what happened on Coruscant. I don't know why they targeted the run. Lando shook his head.
They didn't. The majority of the droids here are stolen.
You mean this attack was meant for someone else?
Probably.
Han didn't want to think about that, not now. The cries of the wounded had increased as the smoke cleared. Listen, I think we should set up the Lady Luck as a medical facility. Lando nodded.
I'll get her ready.
Lando and Chewie went off. Then Han saw Blue sitting on a pile of rubble, her arms cradling a charred body. He picked his way over to her. Thinking about what the Stai had told him, he looked at the debris with new understanding. The droids had blown themselves up to destroy their masters. But how? Why? He stopped beside Blue and looked at the face of the man she was holding. It was Davis. Blue looked up at Han.
It wasn't supposed to happen this way.
He felt cold. What wasn't?
Davis.
She choked on the word.
You were supposed to trust him. He was supposed to take you out of here.
You knew him?
I loved him. This shouldn't happen to people.
What was the reason for this, Blue? She shook her head.
The credits. Han, you don't know what those kinds of credits do.
Tell me.
You were supposed to go after the equipment. You were supposed to see a trade and follow it to the source.
What's the source?
Almania.
Han leaned away from her. Was Yaril part of this?
Not a willing part. When Selos found out he had left, we decided to use it. You would have come in handy.
To whom?
The credits, Han. You don't understand the credits.
Yes, I do. I do. Han understood. Credits made some people crazy.
His name is Quellen. He wants your wife and her brother.
Why?
Because he hates the New Republic. He thinks it harms people more than it helps them. He wants to be master of the Force in the galaxy.
He wants to be emperor. She shook her head.
He's a good man.
You misjudged me, Blue. Why wouldn't you misjudge this Queller?
I saved your life. So did Davis.
Because you needed me to lure Leia to her death. That doesn't count, Blue.
Han, please.
He backed away from her. Then he realized something. If this wasn't supposed to happen, what went wrong? She spoke in a whisper.
I forgot about the droids. Smugglers always steal droids, you know that.
But these droids, where were they stolen from? Han was afraid he knew, but he waited for her to say it anyway.
Coruscant,
she whispered.
They were stolen from Coruscant.
The New Republic fleet was moving forward. Queller watched it on his screens. At first he wondered if it was moving on momentum. Then he realized, as the wave of cold and death failed to wash over him, that nothing had happened. He called his assistant.
Jan, did you give the order?
Yes, sir.
The wave hit, finally, chill and weak as if it had come from a long distance. It was oddly prolonged, a few deaths, then a few more, then a few after that. He raised his arms, felt the power surge in him, but there was no satisfaction in it. The droids he had designed, especially for the Coruscant fleet, were somehow somewhere else. And meanwhile, the ships were growing closer. Too many of them. If he let them get too close, they would destroy Almania. This time, the terrible cold fell to Leia as if someone were pelting her with ice cubes. This wave wasn't as strong, but it lasted longer, which made it even more terrifying. With a shaking hand, Leia put Alderaan on automatic. They were near the Almanian sector. Soon, the fleet would show on whatever kind of monitoring equipment Queller had. Her time would be limited. She would have to act quickly. She was gambling with her life, hers and Luke's. Almost as if he had heard her thoughts, a private message light appeared on the controls before her. It had come on the private channel she used with Luke. "Coded," it read. "For your eyes only." She acknowledged the coding. The message scrolled onto the screen. "New model droids, dangerous. To be safe, shut down all droids." There was no signature, but the message continued to scroll, repeating over and over. She buzzed the galley. "Lieutenant Ticieri to the cockpit, please." The lieutenant appeared in the cockpit door, and she showed him the message. He studied it in silence for a while, then turned to her. "It makes sense, President, given the detonators on the X-wings." She nodded. She had already thought of that. "How important are the droids to the fleet's mission?"
"Important, but we can get along without them. We aren't using many X-Wings, and we still rely on sentients for much of the shipboard work."
"Then I want you and your team to notify the fleet. Take the escape pods. We can't send messages."
In a moment, her crew would all be gone. She would fly toward Almania, alone. R2-D2 led Cole and C-3PO to Telti. Cole felt fairly awkward arriving in what might be considered a stolen freighter. R2, on the other hand, seemed quite calm. He had made no sounds during the flight, but he did jack into the computer once the ship was away from Coruscant. Cole suspected that R2 was sending messages. Cole watched R2 send one to President Leia, using Luke Skywalker's codes. The messages would help. Cole really didn't want to be doing this on his own. As the ship entered orbit over Telti, Cole requested an immediate landing. A mechanized voice gave him landing coordinates. The entire moon was covered in buildings. The landing coordinates were near another smaller landing strip. The freighter landed, and a dome rose overhead and closed on the ship. All around him, signs flared in several languages. "Personal droids must remain on ships." The dome clicked shut over them. Then a light on the control panel flicked on. A rear hatch opened.
"R2," 3PO said. "Master Cole, you must stop him."
"I have to trust him, 3PO. But go after him. Make sure he's all right."
"But, sir, the signs strictly forbid it."
"If anyone stops you, tell them I forced you to leave the ship. Now go."
Cole watched 3PO trundle down the path in R2's direction. Then he went forth alone to confront whoever was in charge. A small door opened near the freighter. A man walked toward Cole. He wore a cape and had the same sort of undefinable radiance that Skywalker had, although his radiance had a touch of darkness.
"Hello," the man said. "My name is Bratkis. Cole Fardreamer. Are you buying or selling, Mr. Fardreamer?"
"Neither."
Cole gripped the side of the freighter and leaned in.
"Someone is sabotaging your droids."
Bratkis took a step backwards before he managed to cover his reaction.
"What?"
Cole held out his hand, filled with tiny detonators.
"We found these in droids shipped to Coruscant. Those droids were traced here."
"Why didn't one of your people contact me directly?"
"Good question." Cole wished he had a good answer.
I thought
that you could blackmail me. Brachus's smile was tight.
I wasn't thinking about blackmail.
Of course not. You just happened to come here alone in a freighter that is registered to someone else. It seems quite suspicious to me. Perhaps you want to tell me why you brought an outdated R2 unit and an old protocol droid with you and then sent them off alone. Can't you read the signs?
I didn't see the signs until it was too late, Cole stammered.
You don't lie very convincingly. Maybe you want to try again.
Cole was about to answer when he looked around. Behind him were modified assassin droids. Their obsidian faces had no visible eyes. Their arms were blasters, and more appeared from the center of their chests.
That protocol droid belongs to Skywalker's sister. The astromech droid belongs to him. If you value your life, you will tell me what he has planned.
It hadn't taken Leia long to reach Almania. She had circled the planet for some time before she got another sense of Luke. Then she found a docking bay near the area where she had felt his presence. She had slipped into the atmosphere, undetected and unwatched. That bothered her. They were sending ships after her fleet, and they weren't watching their own skies. The planet felt deserted, and that bothered her. As its leader had just declared war on the New Republic, it seemed decidedly odd. She took her lightsaber and her blaster and set the Alderaan's internal alarms. She also set the self-destruct, should anyone overpower the alarms. Then she got out. The air smelled stale. Every movement she made kicked up dust. The equipment was rusted. The computer panels were ripped open. This bay was not abandoned. It had been destroyed. She stepped outside into the fading light and saw dozens of buildings all in a state of disrepair. No one had lived on Almania in a long, long time. Yet she could feel Luke. And someone was watching her.
Wedge stood in the command post of the Mon Calamari star cruiser, Yavin, his hands clasped behind his back. The lieutenant on the lower level called to him.
General, a fleet of ships has just left Armenia's surface.
Keep me apprised, Wedge said.
They appear familiar, sir,
said Ian, Mon Calamari.
They're Victory-class star destroyers, modified Imperial style.
They? Wedge didn't like the sound of this. How many are we looking at here?
5, by my count, sir, along with a full complement of TIE fighters.
This Queller had trained military personnel operating some of the most powerful ships in the galaxy. How had he come by all of this, and so quickly?
His entire military zoomed through space. He had never expected to use them, but Queller was prepared. He was just surprised that his weapon hadn't worked. Someone else had died. The droids hadn't been delivered to the right place. Brachus would pay. Later.
Leia Organa Solo's nearness was distracting. He had felt her ship break through the atmosphere, but he hadn't checked on her since. She wouldn't be hard to find. He would concentrate on her after he had defeated her fleet.
The furry white creature was licking Luke. The stench was incredible, but the sensation was actually pleasant. The burning pain in his back was easing. Then a picture grew in his mind. A little Luke cringing on the floor, holding a weapon. The pain in his hand. No, paw. And the blood. The confusion. Why do these creatures constantly hurt me? And the deep, deep loneliness, a longing for cool woods and fresh water and sunlight. Sunlight. It, the Thernby, missed sunlight. The creature had psychic powers. The Thernby had tapped into Luke's mind.
Hey.
Luke's voice was muffled against the large tongue.
I need to freeze.
Immediately the tongue pulled away from him. He felt a twinge of fear in the large creature. Luke took a deep breath and held out his hand.
I'm not holding anything. The creature tilted its head. It didn't understand him. Luke formed a picture in his mind. He imagined pulling a splinter from the Thernby's paw and medicating the wound. I'm sorry, Luke projected. I thought you were going to hurt me.
The Thernby sent images, people slapping at it, screaming, poking it with sticks and flames.
Then it's hunger.
Its body was 3 times smaller than it should be. The Thernby was starving to death. Slowly, all alone in the dark.
Luke pointed at the grates in the ceiling. He imagined the Thernby batting the grate out with its paws.
The Thernby stood on its hind legs and stretched its long body. The grate was about 1 meter higher than its paws could reach. It demonstrated all its failed methods of escape, trying to use pieces of wood, trying to jump. Nothing loosened the grate.
I could do it, Luke thought.
The Thernby extended its paw, and Luke stepped on it. He began climbing, pulling himself up with his arms, keeping his weight off his ankle. He managed to grip the metal, then hoisted himself up.
The corridor beyond was wide and clean. He scanned the edges of the grate to see if he could pull it free.
Then he heard a voice behind him. Actually, you have to pull the lever. Over to your left.
Luke looked. A lever extended from the tiles near the wall. Beside it stood 4 guards, all holding blasters on him. 7 more guards covered him from the other side. He tried to speak lightheartedly.
I guess I'm your prisoner again. What do you plan to do with me?